So Josh Hall, he just recently wrote a book called Beyond AI, Creating the Conscious of the Machine. It's one of the first books that starts to look at some of the potential promise and peril of this technology. Definitely recommend checking it out. It's a good read. And he is I believe a fellow at the Institute for Molecular Manufacturing. He's been involved in a number of areas. He's been working with Carrick Drexler for a while now. Has developed a number of interesting concepts in the field of nanotechnology. One of which is utility fog, which I'm sure many of you have heard about. A number of other great things. So come on up, Josh. Thank you.
Is this live? Okay, thanks. And thanks for the Singularity Institute for inviting me. I'm having a blast, and I hope everybody else here is too. Okay, when I was a kid in the 1960s, I spent a little time building robots out of tin cans with bicycle reflectors for their eyes. And of course, I knew, because I was a great fan of Isaac Asimov, that a robot had to be built with the three laws. And so I wrote the three laws down on a piece of paper and stuck them in the tin can that was the robot's head. Well, a friend of mine came along, and who was also a Asimov fan, and he had read the stories, and he says, well, that's not right. The three laws have to be built directly into the basic fabric of the robot structure. So I took a nail and I scratched them into the tin can. Okay, I assume everybody in here knows the three laws. Is there anybody that has not seen these? Okay, you can leave. But these are really the classic. Any discussion of machine ethics or how to build safe robots or anything like that, really, for two-thirds of a century now, has had to start with these three laws. In fact, people have written PhD theses on them, and people, for example, have compared these to the three parts of the tricameral mind as described by Freud. The first law is the superego, and the second law is the ego, and the third law is the id. And in fact, because Asimov read absolutely everything, I'm almost certain that he had read Freud and might have had some of this in the back of his mind when he made them up. But the point is that they've had a tremendous amount of staying power, and they really form the basis for any discussion of how you make safe robots. The only problem is that these three laws, as they're phrased in English, are not really what Asimov had in mind. What he had in mind in the first story he wrote about safe robots was that you build it to be good, and it's good because you built it that way. It just works. This is the classic story, Robbie, where you have a robot that is built to be a companion for a little girl who just absolutely adores the robot, and the mother, who can be seen standing with arms akimbo in the window, doesn't like the robot and wants to get rid of it. So the father is explaining to the mother why the robot is much more to be trusted than a human, because he's just made that way. And Asimov, you know, being one of these great pro-technology types and so forth, and pro-science, just assume, you know, you say that and everybody will understand it. Well, of course, John Campbell, the great editor of science fiction, rejected Robbie because of the three laws of short fiction. It just doesn't make a story when the robot just works. You have to have something go wrong. And so Asimov and Campbell sat down and wrote the laws in the form that I've showed to you. And as I think it was Wendell was explaining yesterday, Asimov then spent the rest of his career showing how the laws, as couched in English, had loopholes and went wrong and all sorts of stuff like that. Okay, but Asimov lived in the era of cybernetics. Okay, this is his concept of what the laws were, really were scratched deeply into the metal of the robot structure. This picture, by the way, is from a really gorgeous book that was in the 1950s by Pierre de Lutiel about cybernetics. And this is Gray Walter, who is the inventor of these cool little electronic turtles that's run by vacuum tubes, and it kind of scoots around like a Roomba, except that it doesn't vacuum. But this is in the 50s, and the caption to this picture was, in their Sussex or Surrey home, that Gray Walter and his wife are looking at their two children, one of whom is. So there was just a little hype behind this, but the reason I mentioned this book is that Asimov wrote the preface, and in the preface of this book he referred to what was going to come about as a result of cybernetics and the understanding of the mind by science and the ability to build robots. And he referred to it as the intellectual revolution. And he said that by analogy to the Industrial Revolution. He said this is just going to be a period in history at the end of which things are going to be drastically different. It's going to change the human condition. And we'll have to do a lot less of the dirty work and maybe have more enjoyable and productive lives as a result of it. But to get back to his notion of what the three laws were actually like inside of a robot, there's a little byplay in The Naked Sun where he has a roboticist explaining some of the innards of one of the robots that has been just slightly tweaked for special tasks to Lige Bailey, the detective, and he says, if you read that strengthening of the C integral governing the Sikorkovich tandem root response at the W65 level, and in the actual book, Bailey says double talk, but the point is that Asimov's notion of how the laws were represented were a lot more like circuitry than text, that basically you built the robot with the structure, the same idea he had going back to Robbie. You just built it so the way it understood the world involved that all of its actions would follow these laws. So you didn't have to worry about the definition of what a human was and whether to obey or so forth. The definition of human was just built in the way it actually managed to perceive things. Okay, well, there, besides the fact that the laws are not really text, but something one hopes better and deeper in the understanding of the robot, and they probably would actually work reasonably well for a robot that was of the sort that Asimov was envisioning, like a household servant, that's not what we're worrying about here. We're worrying about things that will possibly, instead of being our servants, be our masters. The Asimov's robots didn't, especially in the early days, didn't improve themselves, and they didn't become more intelligent or more powerful than human beings, except in a physical sense. And so we have a completely different problem. Okay, imagine trying to set down a set of rules for a machine that is going to exist in a situation where it's operating in a world of concepts that you don't know. You have no idea not only what kind of world it is, but the concepts it's going to be used to parse that world. They're all beyond you, okay? And you're going to sit down and try and write a law that tells it what to do. It's going to be like Hammurabi trying to prevent the Enron scandal, okay? You just can't do that, especially you can't do it in English. So what you're going to have to do is something that's a lot more like a conscience. You're going to have to build in something that is a lot more abstract, vague, general principles, tradition, and that sort of thing. And you're going to have to build the machine in such a way that it can continue to exercise the same kind of judgment that you did in extending the rules itself in order to get the effect ultimately that that you want, or maybe even that you don't want. My great grandfather, not great grandfather, great great grandfather kept slaves. Well, I don't keep slaves, but if he had written the laws, he might have done something. If he had been able to make them ironclad and so forth, he might have done something that we would now see as being actually quite immoral. And so the fact that morality itself can evolve and get better argues against the notion that we should try and put these ironclad restraints on the robots in terms of the world as we currently understand it, because the robots are not only going to understand the world more deeply, but they're going to understand morality more deeply than we are. And the other thing is that there's just no chance that everybody is going to take these laws that we come up with and put them in the robots anyway. I think that there are two obvious classes of this, besides the fact that they're just going to be random people all over the world building robots. They're going to be military robots, and nobody's going to build a military robot like this one that actually does have a gun with the first law that says a robot can't harm a human being. There's also going to be corporate robots. In fact, I would go so far as to guess that by 2050, most corporations are going to be largely run by their management information systems. They are pretty much going to be required by law to have their first law be make a profit. So you just don't have the opportunity to force everybody who's going to be building AIs to build AIs the way you want them to. Well, then what can you do? What we have to do is to design sets of rules and ways of building our robots and AIs that we know they will be able to do well in the ecosystem of all the different kinds of minds that will exist tomorrow. They're going to want to occupy evolutionarily stable strategies so that they'll be able to compete, and in fact they will be sort of helped to compete by the fact that we know ahead of time, in some cases, just what the good strategy is going to be. But we pick ones that are not only stable, but that are beneficial to us. Okay, rule number one, a robot shall understand as much as possible, an AI. This actually goes back to something that I think Peter Voss was saying yesterday, that there's a lot of evil that gets done just because people are dumb. The smarter the robot can be, the more it can act, if it's acting in its self-interest, act in its enlightened self-interest, the better off not only it will be, but the rest of us will be as well. Some people, going back to Socrates, have just pointed out that this is actually one of the major points of any kind of morality. Okay, sub-law of number one, a robot should understand mimetic evolution. Why should it bother to understand evolution? Well, evolution is actually where morals come from in the first place. This is a vampire bat. And vampire bats, surprisingly enough, were the first place where the occurrence of reciprocal altruism was detected and documented in natural science. It turns out that the little bats go out and they find large animals to suck blood from, and they come back, and some of them have been lucky and found a nice juicy animal, and some of the other ones don't. And what the bats will do is to let the unlucky ones suck blood from them in hopes that they'll be given the same courtesy later when they have bad luck and the other one has good luck. And this is actually the first place that they found this. This is a couple of decades back, I think. The other interesting thing is that the vampire bats that do this have brains three times as big as the brains of the bats that don't. And you can point out the the sort of obvious reason that they need to be able to identify cheaters and sort of understand the dynamic and recognize each other for this to work. It does seem that intelligence and at least the basic form of reciprocal altruism actually do go together in nature. But why mimetic evolution? If I were building an android, a human-shaped robot, I would not give it a backbone. In fact, I don't know anybody that has built an android and actually built a backbone with all this sort of silly stack of stuff that the reason we have backbones is because we're descended from fish. If you're building a robot fish, which is this thing over here, you do give it a backbone. A backbone makes sense for a fish. It has to sinuously flow through the water. So a backbone is actually a reasonable thing for a fish to have. The AIs that we built are going to be built entirely out of our ideas. And we can take the ideas that are backbones, that are just sort of sitting around with no particular reason to be here in our current situation because we had inherited them from older situations because we were descended from, savanna apes, and leave those out when we build the AIs. The AIs will be in a culture that we have created. They're going to be composed of these ideas, and they're going to be evolved in mimetic evolution, but they don't need to actually fight each other. I mean, we don't need to actually fight each other. We should be happy to be in a situation where our bodies can cooperate while our ideas are competing. And it only makes sense to build robots that understand this in the first place. So we can start the AIs out in this this stable strategy, this attractor of mimetic strategies that took us quite a while and a lot of blood to find, but we can start them there. And it's a stable spot, as far as we know, in many ways. And so there's no need for them to repeat all the mistakes that it took us to get to where we are. So let's call a robot that has an evolutionarily stable strategy built in as its sort of set of operating principles and an evolutionarily stable conscience, or an ESC. Okay, the key idea here is that an AI that has an ESC and he knows that it is an ESC, he understands what that means and why it's there and how it got there, would realize that if he moved off of it, evolutionary pressures are just going to push him back onto it anyway. So he's not going to go to a lot of trouble to change. He's going to understand why he has the morality there and what it took to get there. I mean, he obviously should know all of history since we'll certainly be able to put the Library of Congress on an iPod by that point. So he'll actually have access to all of this stuff and have a deeper understanding of the whole business than we do. And that means when he gets into a new situation where he has to build new concepts that we've never heard of, he'll still have guidelines to extend the spirit of our morality and ethics into that new situation. And that's why I claim that robots, AIs, new minds, and so forth should be built understanding mimetic evolution to start with. Law number two. Robots shall be open source. We live in a world that is largely run by artificial organizations with no conscience. Now, when I started working on the book that became Beyond AI, I had this horrible thought that if we build these superhumanly intelligent machines and we don't understand how to build consciences and we don't put them in, we're going to have created a bunch of superhuman psychopaths. And so I went around, I was talking, and I was doing research on the book, and I talked to my good friend Robin Hanson, who is the economist who invented fact futures, among other things. And I described this dilemma. We're going to be building these superhuman psychopaths. And he says, "So what?" And I said, "Huh?" And he says, "Well, we live in a world of superhuman psychopaths, and we aren't all dead. And one of the main reasons that we do is that corporations are required by law, among other things, besides to make a profit, they're required to have their books inspected. And the way corporations work internally is that the flow of money is their motivating principle. It's essentially their emotions. And although we know of cases where corporations have slipped out of this and made hay while they shouldn't have been, they by and large don't kill off a lot of people, and they by and large do some kind of good in the marketplace. Okay, the same thing is true of governments. The more transparent the government, the less likely it is to commit atrocities and so forth like that. We know that openness transparency in government is a good thing. And it's by analogy to these properties that I claim that if you have an AI whose source code or the important parts of its motivational structure are in fact open and available to be inspected, that it's more to be trusted. Okay, this is actually a corollary sort of to the first law, where we're talking about being intelligent. The motivations of a robot, and this is just one of the particular parts of intelligence that we should think about putting in ahead of time, is that the robot will take account of the motivations of the other sentient beings around it, because it's going to live in a world that's composed of those sentient beings, and its environment is going to be composed of what they decide to do back to it. And this turns out to be an evolutionary stable conscience in a very wide range of communities, ranging from the bats to the world economy. And finally, it is the 250th anniversary year of Baden-Powell, founder of the Boy Scouts. And I just want to point out that the key difference between a real artificial intelligence, a human-level Turing test-passing AI, and any other computer system that we've ever built, is the fact that, by and large, the AI is going to be programmed by people talking to it. We're going to bring it up like a kid. If by some amazing chance we do manage to build an AGI in the next 5 or 10 years, it's still going to be a while, because you're just going to have gotten that three-year-old, like Sam Adams. And you're going to spend the next N years teaching it. And we're going to teach it according to the ways that we've developed of teaching children morality for who knows how long. And this is one of the good ones. So I think robots should be Boy Scouts.